Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with a fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into just an amazing guest this week, referred by another buddy, Kevin Richardson, I just wanted to drop a line once again to remind everybody to go in and listen to more of these amazing podcasts. You want to tune in at www.markpattisonnfl.com. I've now done around 200 of these, and they continue to amaze me, inspire me, and drive me in terms of continuing to get up and make it happen and find these different inspirational people like we'll get into later today. Also, as I continue to remind people, I will be heading off to Mount Everest this next March, trying to become the first NFL player to climb the seven summits, including taking on Lhotse, the fourth highest mountain, all within 24 hours. It should be an epic battle and an epic challenge. You can follow my journey through there. There's also going to be a Garmin plugin, which you can actually follow me going up and down the mountain. So that's cool. So tune in on that. And last, I continue to fundraise for a cause called Amelia's Everest to Lhotse Challenge. My daughter does have epilepsy. I've connected with a fantastic organization here in Sun Valley, Los Angeles, and New York called Higher Ground. And together we're trying to, again, bring more money and awareness and hopefully that all people with PTSD, epilepsy, and other cognitive issues will be healed one of these days. Okay, so it's not that often that I actually get the one and only Hercules on the pod. I'm very stoked up to have this guy. He's my second actor in, I think, 7 weeks. I had Tom Arnold on this last week. But I want to welcome to the pod Kevin Sorbo. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. That's it's good to be here. And you're in the area that I've spent plenty of time in summers as well at the charity events for golf and skied there a few times as well. So I love that Sun Valley area.
Yeah, Sun Valley is amazing. And I've actually been to West Palm Beach, Florida, where you're currently residing. You know, it's interesting. You've had this long storied career in Hollywood. And I'm always curious on, you know, that path because, you know, especially when you find somebody that grows up in a teeny tiny town in the middle of Minnesota and, you know, what those connection pieces were. Like one day you wake up and you look at on television and you look at the movies and you aspire to be, I don't know if it was John Wayne or who your mentor was, but there's some bug that hits you and, you know, you really got to start thinking big in terms of how you're actually going to get there. So how did that all come together for you?
Yeah, I grew up in a really small town called Mound, Minnesota. It's on the western shore of beautiful Lake Minnetonka, about 25 miles west of Minneapolis. And fourth of five kids. My dad was a school teacher. My mom was a nurse, but pretty much a stay-at-home mom since she had five kids so quick in her life. And, you know, I was 11 years old, and we went to the Guthrie Theater. It's a very famous theater in Minneapolis. A lot of Broadway plays start there before they moved to New York. And it was The Merchant of Venice. It was a Shakespeare play. I didn't know what the heck they were saying because it was Shakespeare. But I was mesmerized by the actors on stage. And on the way home, I told my mom, I said, you know what? I'm going to be an actor. And she said, that's nice, dear. A little pat in the leg. Oh. And I kind of kept to myself because I was a jock, grew up playing football, basketball, baseball. And, you know, we kind of make fun of the people in the drama classes, drama departments. But I kept saying, but the best looking girls are on the drama class, guys. Yeah. So I really didn't start going after it until I got into college. Double major business, marketing, advertising, but took a minor in drama and started doing a lot of commercials. Minneapolis is home to a lot of big companies. I don't think people realize they got Best Buy there. They got 3M. They got Honeywell, Pillsbury, General Mills. So there's a lot of commercials. Target, all those things are headquartered there. So I got that all important Screen Actors Guild card before I made the big move out to Los Angeles. But I had a few sidetracks in there along the way. I ended up in Dallas for a while. I had buddies playing football down there at SMU that I went to high school with. And then I traveled over to Europe. It was going to be 3 months, turned into 3.5 years. And I signed with agents over there and did a lot of print work, a lot of commercial work in Milan and Paris and Munich. And it made me grow up. I didn't think I'd spend that much time there. My parents kept going, aren't you going to go to LA? So I finally get to LA to kind of pursue that dream. But that goal was set in me early in life. And I kind of focused on it ever since I was 11 years old.
Yeah, well, lucky you and congratulations. And a lot of it can get down to perseverance and luck and break and all those things. And I say all the time, preparation meets opportunity. You know, I think it's one thing to be able to go out and to want to act. And so you find the local theater or something, and that's kind of the purest form, and that's awesome. But at the end of the day, it's how you monetize your life. And now you're married to a beautiful gal, an actress, and you've got 3 kids. And, you know, you really want to keep that thing alive. And so you need some breaks beyond just a couple of luck and good lucks, because we all age and you get older. And at some point in time, you know, you can't model, you know, the rest of your life, or maybe some can, but, you know, where you really start to make a mark. And you certainly did. You've been in over 40 films and, you know,
64 to be exact.
64 to be exact. Thank you for that update. 64 to be exact, and a bunch of TV stuff. And certainly you had a big career with any series that goes 6 years, more than one, you know, is really amazing with Hercules. But, you know, this story is so much more than that. And that's the reason why I wanted to have you on. You know, as a former NFL player, especially when I was originally drafted by the Raiders in LA, we had famous people coming around our facility all the time. So that's been nothing, you know, new to me. But it's really the depth of a person and really, you know, what their story is and how they got there. And that's where it really, I feel like there's a connection in terms of your story on how you got there. And so I'll let you tell it. And there's another connection piece, which I'll get into in just a minute. But you had a gigantic health scare. And I want you to describe that to me, Kevin. But I also want to understand, like, when you came out of that, right? What were the learning pieces? Was there a lot of times when people are in peril, they're sitting there like, oh my God, you know, if you can just get me out of this, I'm at sea for 180 days, you know, and I've gone through, like I said, almost 200 podcasts, and I've had just amazing people, you know, no arms, no legs, blind, going down the Grand Canyon, climbing Mount Everest, all these crazy stories. And all of them had to overcome this something. And so for you, would you please describe what happened to you? And then let's go to the bigger picture of life, you know, how that really made you focus in on your faith, because I know that's strong, your kids, your family, your wife, those things.
Well, when I got Hercules, I ended up down in New Zealand. By a third year, that series became the most watched TV show in the world in 176 countries. I was just starting to do, I did my first big budget motion picture called Call the Conqueror. My movie career was really starting to take off because of that series. At the end of season 5 on Hercules, I had all kinds of problems with my left shoulder. Couldn't quite figure what was going on. And these 3 fingers in his hand were numb and cold. And it was just weird. But I was blowing it off because, you know, I was working 12 to 14 hours a day. I was lifting weights 2 hours a day. And, you know, it's like back then when you're younger, you know, I was 225, 230. I was in ripped up. I was in better shape in my 30s than I probably was in my 20s. And I was doing all my own stunts because my ego said that I could. And I went back to the States to do promotional work on my first movie, Call the Conqueror. And then I went to see my doctor in LA and said, God, something's going on here. I don't know what is going on. They found a lump way up here in my left subclavicle. He wanted to do a biopsy on it. Before they could do the biopsy, I went to see my chiropractor. Now, in 8 years of seeing this guy, he was based in Santa Monica. He's never cracked my neck because I don't like my neck cracked. He can crack it into my body, but leave my neck alone.
It's scary, well, brother. It's scary, by the way, too. Somebody go, blah, 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 whack, right? Yeah. I mean, I feel like always my neck's going to fall off.
I know. So I never have, I mean, has it happened before? Yeah, and I never liked it. So this guy knew that. And a voice in my head warns me, don't let him crack your neck, over and over again. I'm going, why am I getting this? Don't let him crack your neck. He's never cracked my neck. So while I'm arguing with the voice, he cracks my neck. Well, that lump here ended up being an aneurysm that had been spitting blood clots down on my arm. And that vicious crack knocked a series of strokes into my brain. And I spent the next 4 months learning how to walk and balance again. It took me 3 years to fully recover from it. It was, it's like when you step out of the limelight that way and you think, I wasn't a pro athlete, but I felt like I was a good athlete in great shape. And all of a sudden I'm playing this guy Hercules and I can't even stand up and walk. And I'm in a rehab center with 90-year-old stroke victims. And it was tough on my ego. It was tough on my psyche. It was tough on my body. I mean, it was just brutal for me to get through this thing. And, I wrestled with God. I wrestled, when things happen like this in life, we tend to blame everybody else but ourselves. And my wife at the time, we weren't married at the time, but she said, every time I got down, she said, it happened. What are you going to do? And thank God in my upbringing with my parents, who are very strong-willed people and taught us all about self-reliance, made me a very strong individual, made me a very motivated individual. I did 10 times more than what the neurologists were telling me to do to get recovery. And they said after a year, wherever you are after a year, you're probably going to live with that the rest of your life. Well, after a year, I still wasn't doing that great. And so I kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Like I said, it took 3 full years. My wife bugged me for the longest time to write a book, and I didn't want to write the book. But finally, years later, I did write it back in 2012. And here's the book right here. And it's called True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. And I call it True Strength because in Hercules, that was a television show, right? I mean, I had a bunch of stunt guys making me look like a big stud. And the reality is I'd rely on my own self. And I've always been a person of faith, but I never needed faith until this roadblock hit me. And the reason this book has been such a wonderful thing for me, just for therapy, I guess, it's been so amazing for other people that have read it, because whether it's cancer, a car crash, heart attack, stroke, whatever it may be, we're all going to hit that roadblock in our life. I don't care what age you are, what your physical fitness is or what it's not. What do you do when you hit that roadblock? How do you react to it? Do you blame the world? Do you blame God, family, and friends? Or do you look in the mirror and say, okay, I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to push myself and push myself. So I tell people, you got to find your own true strength within yourself to push past and find a different avenue to go in your life. Otherwise, you're only going to, it's just the life's just going to get darker for you. And I don't want to have a dark life in my 30s.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough thing when you think you're invincible. You're literally Hercules. And I've seen the pictures. I saw the show back in the day. You're all yoked up. And then you have this thing come and really knock you on your knees. And then, what do you do about it? How are you going to respond? The correlation I wanted to quickly share with you is that my dad, who's no longer with us, passed away 6 years ago. He was the life of the party, just an incredible communicator, incredible person, great mentor for me, had a massive stroke, and it just literally knocked out his whole communication grid. And with that, the first month was just trying to understand what happened. Month two, it's just like, okay, maybe there's hope. And month three is like, this is not going to happen, right? Like you said, there was so much blockage and everything. And at the end of the day for him, and we had talked about this, a lot in our past history, which is, if either one of us were ever in that position, we just want to, move on to a better life, right? My dad was a guy of faith. And so it was very, very blessed and fortunate and grateful that, he flew away to heaven and that's where he resides, today. So that meant a lot to me, but I went through that whole thing and I know how scary that is, not just for you, but everybody around you who that either relies on you or you have a relationship, whether it's your wife or your kids or girlfriend or whatever that path is, your parents. And it is hard, man. And you just don't know because it's a brain issue, right? Blockage. And what that is going to be. One of the things that you said, I want to dive down a little further in this, which is you talked about it was therapeutic in terms of being able to write this book, True Strength, and then you quickly transition because everybody else in life is going to go through something at some point in time, and I've experienced that. That's why I'm climbing mountains. That's why I'm doing this podcast, is because I went through my trials and tribulations. And out of that, I've emerged, doing this other stuff. I had to do a pivot. But I also know that when I was on the mountains, for me, I've done a ton of writing about my journey and how I got there and all this stuff. And for you, I know you said it was therapeutic and you kind of equated that to where other people can relate to that. But for you, when you had to really peel back the layers, is there one thing that stood out or two things or three things that like you had to improve yourself or make a lifestyle change, or was there any nuance in there as you're like, you know, really trying to like understand why this happened to you?
Well, I was forced to make a lifestyle change, obviously. I mean, it sucked. I mean, I'll tell you, for 2 years I had vertigo, and it didn't matter if I was laying down, seated, or standing up, I was always falling back. You know, you get that jerk sometimes, like you're falling back. I had that sensation almost 24 hours a day. Halfway through the second year of my recovery, there would be like a week window where I didn't feel that more anymore. And I tell my wife that, and she goes, "See, you're getting better." And that gave me hope. 4 months after the strokes, I actually went back down to New Zealand to start season 6 on the series. And not that Universal Studios cared about me as a person, but they cared the fact that this was a big moneymaker for them. But I'll tell you what, I don't care what their motivations were. For me, it gave me light at the very at the end of a very long and dark tunnel for me, even though I went from a 14-hour day to 1 hour a day those first couple months. In 2 hours, they slowly added things. They had to make a crutch. We made fun of it. It's called a butt crutch. I'm 6'3", but I would sit on this thing, get down about 6'1", and it would have me look like I'm still standing just to do scenes. And I would do like one or two scenes a day where they would just sort of have me say my lines and cut around things, and they have the other actors saying later after I left set, because they couldn't deal with it because the dizziness and I suffered panic anxiety attacks, things that I never had before. So my wife gave me something that she said, "Every morning I want you to wake up and look in the mirror and say out loud, 'I'm getting better, I'm getting stronger.'" And as corny as that sounded, that was so huge for me to talk to myself and say, "I'm getting better, I'm getting stronger," and keep saying it. And it helped motivate me for the day to just get out and walk. I mean, we started during those 4 months, when I was slowly trying to get my balance back, we would just take walks. And just to walk a half a block and then back to the house again was a small little victory for me. And I would keep a chart. Okay, I took this much more, many more steps today. Just to know that I was gaining on this. And I looked at this and trained like an athlete would when I used to play sports. So it was huge for me to say that mantra over and over again. And you know, it's interesting. I never would have admitted this. It's in the book. But I went to see a shrink. My wife wanted me to see a shrink. And he said to me, he said, "You thought you were Superman. You thought you were Hercules." I said, "No, I didn't." "Yeah, you did." And because your life was going so great, the Universal was gearing up to take over for Arnold as the next action guy. And they were. I just had finished one big action movie, had another one I was going to do, but then the strokes hit. So he said, "You had a lightning bolt hit that and shatter everything in your life. And now you'll never be the same person again, Kevin. You got to create the new Kevin." Because I know I'll never be that same person again. And I know what my limitations are, even though I don't want to set my limitations. I don't want anyone to set the limitations. So I knew I couldn't do certain things anymore. So, but I said, "But I can do this now, and I can do something." You know, it was an interesting transition for me to become a different Kevin Sorbo, which was weird for me to have to even say that. But the studio worked with me. I got another series right after that. And each year I just got stronger and stronger. I passed all the physical exams they were thrown at me and given to me. I still have, if I get overly tired, I have balance issues. If I'm going to drink, I'm going to have one glass of wine. That's it, because that affects me more in my brain. But the best thing about doing this book, True Strength, is really it's opened up speaking events to me that I thought I'd never be doing. COVID killed them this year at about 8 speaking events I was supposed to do, but I've been averaging, you know, 10 to 12 speaking events a year, where I travel the country or up to Canada as well. And I speak, whether it's a medical place where I'm speaking to neurologists or nurses, or if I'm speaking in a church or something, it's a road that I never thought I'd be on. And it's really been fascinating to me. And I could complain, but it doesn't do any good. But I like the road that I'm on now, and I like the movies I'm doing now. I do a lot of family-friendly, faith-based movies. And I don't think anything would have been happening for me had it not been for me to go through what I had to go through.
Yeah, it's always interesting because a lot of times, like you said, we do go through these challenging periods in time in our life. And when you're in the thick of things, you know, the only thing you can do is go through it. You can't go around it. And having that tenacity and knowing and coming to grips with, if you can get to the other side with positivity, mm-hmm. and you know there's going to be struggle, there's something greater that's going to come for you. And you may not know it for 5, 10, 15 years, no. But, and you know, we wish you had the answer, you know, in that instant.
You know, I want to say one thing that this psychologist said for me, which I really liked. He said, are you a man of faith? And I said, well, I am. He goes, well, you don't have to be for what I'm going to say to you, but it doesn't hurt. He said, have you ever heard of the grateful prayer? And I said, well, I know what prayers. No, but have you ever heard of the grateful prayer? And I said, no. And he said, well, here's why you don't have to be a man of faith to even say the grateful prayer, but you can be sitting in your car, sitting in your office, jogging, walking a mountain, whatever. And you can say, you know, I'm grateful the sun's out today. I'm grateful I have a pillow. I'm grateful I have hot water. We get so caught up in our own lives. Look at all the anger we have in this world right now, and the divisiveness and the hatred and the violence going on. Even in your home city of Seattle, you see all the stuff going on with these Antifa punks, you know, and it's unbelievable that they're just destroying people's businesses and destroying lives. And there's so much hate. And I'm trying to go, you know what, how do we find a place where we can just help people that must be so dark in their own lives that they have to turn to that kind of violence, that kind of anger and hatred. You kind of wonder what their lives must be like. And we got to find a place where we're grateful, because there's a lot of things to be grateful for, no matter where you are in your life, no matter where your economic world is, or, you know, where your job is, or your family situation, or lack of, or whatever. There's places you can still find pockets of gratefulness.
Totally agree with you. And, you know, look, not one person can always change the world, because people come from different viewpoints. But I just, I really believe that walking the walk, talking the talk, and being the type of person that doesn't blame others, doesn't lash out, listens. But you got to start with yourself, man. You got to start with really understanding who you are and what you're about, and making sure that you truly are grateful, humble and kind about the different things that you have in your life. And everybody has them. And there's a lot of little secrets, in my opinion, about positive affirmations and positive voices and those words you were talking about, you know, to help you to get there. I want to ask you really quickly about, I think part of this journey is making sure that you have the right people around you as well, right? Because the wrong people can pull you down, the right people can pull you up, right? You used to live in LA. And you now
right there in Santa Monica. I used to bike down your way all the time, Manhattan Beach.
I was living in Santa Monica too. I was north of Montana there for five or six years, and so I'm sure we're in the same hood there. But you know, I'm curious in terms of now you live on the East Coast, you're in Florida, and this connection you've had with your wife, family, and your kids. Again, do you think that through life, through experiences, through maturity, through faith, through those types of things, that, you know, those, you know, you put those things all into a magic crystal ball, and those have been the ingredients to help push you and elevate you in this, especially in your world? You know, you're now taking more charge of your career, which is awesome, but you're still kind of waiting a lot of times for the next gig and the next gig and the next gig. And you need to have that support system in place when you're in the acting world.
My wife was a key element of that. As I told you, we weren't married yet when I suffered the strokes, but she stuck by my side. I even told her, I said, look, I don't know if I'm going to be worth anything with these strokes. I don't know what I'll be able to do. And she stuck by my side, and we still got married. And we got three kids, wonderful kids. I got two boys, 19 and 16, a beautiful daughter at 15. We homeschooled. I should say she does the homeschooling. She was the biochemical engineering major at Duke and speaks five languages. I went to college to play sports and to, you know, go to happy hour with my buddies. So yeah. We went to schools for a completely different reason.
I can understand. Yeah.
So I just, the support I had there, the support I had from my parents, and certainly my faith had a big role in this as well. But without that, you need that. You need those people in your lives to sit there and help push you. And the interesting thing, what you just said, is it's easy to be around people that can pull you down too. And I had that in LA. I had that. And the minute I got rid of people, I said, why do I want to hang with that person and this person? They're just, it just dragging me down. I started working more. I was focused more. I started getting more jobs, more guest spots. It led to, you know, the Hercules thing happened. I know it did, because I had a better focus, and I just wanted positive people in my life, because there's just no reason to hang around people that want to keep pulling you down, because misery loves company. There's a reason that statement is so true. So, the more success I had, the people in my life, that were downers, they started just peeling away on their own, because, you know, they didn't want to be around me because I was having success and they weren't.
Wow. We'll transition a little bit into your movie life now. One of the movies that I really identified that you were in, I thought you were fantastic, is Soul Surfer. And one of the reasons, I have two daughters, one 22 and one 24. And, you know, just because we're so heartfelt, the girl that gets attacked by a shark and you play the scene of rushing her back to the hospital from that bay. What was that movie like? Carrie Underwood, Dennis Quaid, you had some big stars in that movie, being on Hawaii. What was that like?
I'm great. Helen Hunt's in the movie as well. Anna Sophia Robb played Bethany. They cut out two of my best scenes. I wasn't happy about that. I had a great emotional scene with Helen Hunt and a great emotional scene with Dennis, but they took him out of the movie because of time element, which really was a bummer for me. But, you know, we had 2 months in Hawaii where we shot. Bethany was on set every day. And I remember we shot most of it on the north shore of Oahu and Turtle Bay. Then we take a small crew to the north shore of Kauai, where Bethany lives and where it actually happened. And we were 400 meters offshore. We're in the same spot that she was attacked. I remember all of us actors. I had the two actors playing my son and daughter, and then, of course, Anna Sophia Robb playing Bethany. And we're sitting on our boards while the camera guys are setting up. And, you know, we're sitting there, we're dangling our feet in the water, and no one is talking. I finally said, you know, I know we're not saying nothing, but we're all thinking about it right now. Because you're out there 400, you know, four football fields from shore.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But it was an amazing experience to be part of that. And Bethany was, boy, what a champ the whole time there. And she and I brought the movie to the Cannes Film Festival. And we do so many interviews while they screened it there. And she said to me, Kevin, they're going to ask questions to me about the attack. I'm done talking about the attack. So let's do an interview separately. And you handle that part of it because you know just as well as I do, other than feeling the pain. And I said, fine, I got it. I get it. She doesn't want to relive it over and over again with these people. You know, she wanted to talk more about other things. But it was a fun experience, no question.
Yeah, there's another guy I had on, it seems like 150 episodes ago, Mike Kutz. And he's a guy that was from Kauai. He's buddies with Bethany. He also got attacked, and this big tiger shark emerged from underneath, like, wow, a flipping submarine, and came up and just like engulfed him. And as he was trying to fight this shark off, he's hitting him in the snout, and he finally releases him. And his buddy's next, he wasn't surfing, he was boogie boarding. And his buddy next to him, of course, is in horror, and there's blood everywhere. And so he just happened to be able to catch a wave, the next wave that took him all the way in the shore, and his life was saved. But anyways, just another incredible tale of how these things all played out. That was an amazing movie. I want to fast forward. I know there's 64, 65 movies that you've done and a lot of stuff. We don't have to go through all of them, but I want to talk to you more about one of the...
They're not all good, but most of them are. But anyway.
No, but like you're doing stuff today, right? You have a movie coming out. I'm looking behind you. You've got the big Miracle in East Texas. Let's talk about that.
It's the last one I directed. We shot it last year up in Canada. Wonderful film. It's a wonderful movie. And it's a true story set in 1930. And it's got John Ratzenberger's in it and Lou Gossett Jr.'s in it. Tyler Mayne, people know him from the WWF, but they also know him from he's a Sabretooth in the X-Men movies. My wife Sam is in it. She's amazing in it. It was supposed to be out this summer, but obviously COVID killed, you know, theaters opening up. But you know what? I don't want COVID-20. We're going to get back to having normal lives again. We're opening movie theaters. We're going to walk around and actually see people's faces and smile and laugh and say hello. But that'll come out probably next spring. It's a wonderful movie set in 1930 about two con men played by myself and John Ratzenberger that would woo widows out of their money on fake oil wells through Oklahoma and Texas. True story. And they accidentally strike oil. And it's a very, very amazing movie to be part of. I was blessed to direct it. The great Dan Gordon wrote it. He wrote The Hurricane, Denzel Washington, wrote White Earp, Kevin Costner. He was the showrunner in Highway to Heaven with Michael Landon, wrote 60 of those episodes. That'll come out sometime next spring. But I do want to back up a little bit because you brought in Soul Surfer, but I hope people have also seen What If, God's Not Dead, and my other movie, Let There Be Light. Those are all up right now.
I was just going to go to ask you about What If, and I'm actually going to watch that tonight. So tell me about What If.
What If was really my first, I guess you could say, faith-based movie. Dallas Jenkins is a friend of mine. Dallas's father's Jerry Jenkins, wrote all the Left Behind books. And Dallas showed it to me, the script. He said, what do you think of the script? So I read it, called him the next morning. I said, well, who's playing Pastor Ben in the movie? He says, I got maybe this guy. I said, no, I'm playing it. He goes, no, I can't afford you. This is such a low-budget movie. And I said, I don't care. I got to play this guy. It's such a great movie. And it had a small theatrical release. A couple years later, I did God's Not Dead. Same writers that did What If. God's Not Dead just exploded. You can't explain why sometimes these small independent movies do what they do. Great movie. But a little $2 million movie making $140 million is unbelievable. What If is a better movie, and it deserves people. I think we should re-release it again because it is such a good movie. And John Ratzenberger plays this angel that comes from heaven to say, God's given you a what if. So it's a reverse. It's a Wonderful Life. He said, you know, the road you're on is the wrong road. You were intended for this road. Trouble is, I like the road I'm on, but I have no choice but to see what this other road is. And, you know, there's always an opportunity cost no matter what we do. We all have what ifs in our lives. And, you know, turn a different corner and you, something else could have happened, right? Sometimes you take a left when you should have taken a right. That happens every day in life. There's always choices we make. So it's an interesting movie. It's like a reverse It's a Wonderful Life, but it's very touching. It's very funny. You will laugh, you'll cry, you'll cheer, but it's a Christy Swanson is in it as well. And she's just great in it. But it was a lot of fun. And I recommend that movie highly.
So with what's going on right now with COVID, today we're talking on October 25th, right? This will come out right in a couple of weeks. And everybody that, you know, the movie theaters have all been shut down more or less. And so there's all this streaming, you know, if you're an investor in Netflix or some of these other ones, you know, it's gone gangbusters. In terms of a lot of these movies, is there a strategy when you are a part of this, you know, you're the producer, you're the director, in terms of you're going to go down the Prime Amazon route, or you're going to go the Netflix route, or you're going to go the Hulu route? How does that all come together?
Well, I want my movies to get out theatrically. That makes a big difference for an independent movie. I mean, right now, the limited theatrical releases out there are all big Hollywood movies, and they're taking up all the screens. And it's hard to compete. You know, I do movies, I call them actors' movies. I call them movies that people can relate to. We don't have big visual effects. It's not, you know, I do movies where you're dealing with real people, where I want people to identify. We can't identify with Thor and Superman. We can enjoy it, look at the special effects. But the reality is, I want to do movies that made me want to be an actor in the first place, to make people look at these movies and think, you know, real life situations where people can go, wow, yeah, I can identify that guy with a guy, or I know a woman like that, whatever it may be. So if you get a theatrical release, is very important for the streaming that comes afterwards. Like, we got a really good contract with Amazon with my last movie, Let There Be Light. Now, Let There Be Light was in theaters. Sean Hannity funded that. And it's a wonderful, touching movie. It's more about hope, redemption, love, and things like that, the things that we need more in our world right now. And Amazon saw how well it did in theaters and gave us a great 3-year deal. So to get that, they both, Netflix and Amazon both want this movie back here, Miracle in East Texas, but they want to see what the numbers look like in theaters first. That's why we're holding on to it. I mean, it's a 1930 movie. I mean, it's timeless in a way. It's not going to age. It'll be ready to go this spring and summer. So we'll release it then and see what kind of battle we can get with Amazon, Netflix, and even Hulu. We'll see what happens.
It's really, I don't know anything about this world, your world that I'm talking about. But what I'm hearing is that it's very strategic, right? Yeah. In terms of who's in it and what kind of playtime it gets and timing and all those other things. Like you said, there's a movie in there that cost $2 million to do and it made $186 million. You know, who knew that would actually happen? Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, the investor was his first time investing. And I told him, I said, Troy, you don't understand. It's not usually this easy for any movie. What happened to you is like one baseball team getting two grand slams in one inning. Seriously, yeah. It's that rare to happen. But, you know, these movies, these independent movies are getting better and better. The scripts are great. And a lot of actors from all levels want to be in these movies now because they're good movies. I mean, I like a good visual effect movie, too. But, you know, after a while, it's like, okay, another 18 buildings in New York City fell down. They saved the world, but 3 million people just died in New York. They don't talk about that part of it. See the destruction going on. So I'm you know, my plan is to keep doing more of these. I'm about to be in the Reagan movie, Dennis Quaid. I'm working with Dennis again. He's playing Ronald Reagan. I'm playing his pastor. I just got funded for my next movie, the next Left Behind movie. I'm doing that one. I got two movies I'm shooting up in Kelowna, up there northeast of Vancouver.
Yeah.
So it's busy. I just finished shooting 8 episodes of a new half-hour comedy back in L.A. So that'll be out next year as well. So, you know, things are still buzzing. I'm still making things happen, which is good.
What do you love most about it?
I love being on set. I love the creative process. I just do.
Yeah, I mean, so much about these podcasts are about talking to guys like you and others and the inspiration that people can get. And really, at the end of the day, it's all really not only trying to help people overcoming whatever they're going through, but ultimately finding out your why and your passion and what you really have that drive for in life. And to get excited, you know, wake up every flipping day and just get jacked up about you've got this opportunity. You know, you just rattle off 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7. I'm not sure how many movies and projects that you have going on. I mean, it's so awesome that you're able to do that. But somebody could be a painter, or somebody could be, I work at Sports Illustrated. You know, there's all these different things that people can do, but you have to get up and you have to get after it and you have to try and you have to apply discipline to it. And, you know, you got to have positive people around. There's a whole list of things that have to be in that box that have to be checked off to continue to elevate in your life on whatever you want to do. And it sounds like, you know, you've been on the path for a long time. And the other thing I really love about what you're doing is these are your words. I'm sure there's an actual name for it, but it, you know, these faith-based films. And really, to me, what that means, it doesn't matter if you believe in God or whatever your religious belief is, but it's just good people doing good things with positive outcomes, and not, like you said, 3 million people blowing up because a building collapsed, you know, in New York. You know, it's crazy. So positivity, we need a lot more of that stuff around the world.
Well, I mean, I've been lucky in the industry because I'm one of few people I know that when I moved to Los Angeles to pursue this dream, I didn't know one person out there. I never had to work another job. I know guys are selling cars, they're working in bars and restaurants, whatever it may be. I work very well commercially. I was getting guest spots here and there in Cheers, Murder, She Wrote, The Commission, whatever. I kept busy. I got myself in the toughest acting classes because I wanted to be, that's hard to get in that class. You got to audition. I said, great, that's where I want to go. And I think that's what you have to do, is not be afraid of having that failure. I used to caddy at this private country club in Minneapolis, and we didn't have any money. My dad was a school teacher, for crying out loud, public school teacher with 5 kids. But I never felt without, because my parents were always very good and strong parents, were motivational parents. And I asked these guys, how did you become successful? And every single one of these guys said, I failed, Kevin, and I failed again, and then I failed some more. And failure, you have to find out, is a positive thing, not a negative thing, because you're going to learn a lot from those things. You can get rid of some of the failure. You just say, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. But some of this I can take with me and learn. So people, you know, I think a lot of people give up on their dreams and they give up on that goal and they become miserable in their lives. Find something you love to do. I'm in an industry that is tough as hell. It's tough to get a job. Everybody's out there. Everybody in LA, you're out there playing football. I mean, everybody is an actor. And to me, it was just like, okay, I'm going to make it though. I mean, I was determined in my mind that I was going to make it. I went out there with a single goal in mind. And the best advice I got from a dear buddy of mine I've known since, you know, 2 years old, still friends to this day, he said, remember, Sorbs, it's called show business, not show show. And I always remember that, to treat it like a business.
Yeah, no, that's wise. And that should also help motivate and drive people in terms of what they're there to do and not... You know, I think too many people get hung up on, you know, being recognized and all this nonsense, you know, when they walk into a restaurant, and that's not what it's about at all, right? And the sooner you get over that, the better. Do you have, in kind of rounding through base here, do you have, this is the fun part of what you do. Maybe you might not think it's fun, but I think it's fun. when you do a movie and now you go and you hit the circuit, right? And now you're going on Letterman or Leno or any of those shows, you know, there's a whole crop of new guys today, but you know, is that fun or is that a pain in the ass to do?
It's part of the business. You got to do it. I mean, I was on Leno a number of times and Letterman as well. Leno was great. I mean, I miss Johnny Carson. He was the last of the really, Leno was probably the last really great ones I want to deal with. The guys today, it's all just, I don't think there's anybody really great out there for talk show hosts. I really don't. It's kind of sad what's turned into. I love what they used to do back then, but I know it's part of the business, and I have no problem doing it because, you know, it is a business after all, and you got to sell your product, and, you know, the movie is the product and you want people to go see it because you're competing against so many other things. I mean, if you go back in the 60s, even the 70s, there was really only 3 channels to choose from. Now there's hundreds of channels to choose from. So it's a different beast to get your product to be seen by people. And the tastes out there are just so wide and so varied right now. So, yeah, it's just part of the beast. I got to say one thing real quick, because I know I brought up my book, True Strength, right? Yeah. My wife and I wrote one together as a follow-up called True Faith. Yeah, she's the better looking one, so it's good to put her on the cover as well.
I can look at. We're doing a Zoom for everybody's listening to this. I can tell you right now, that's for sure.
But they can go to kevinsorbo.net. Christmas is coming up, guys, and you can get autographed copies. I got everything on there, though. I mean, I got Hercules scripts. I got pictures. I got DVDs. I got so much stuff in kevinsorbo.net. Check it out. Christmas is around the corner.
No, I appreciate you saying that. I was going to ask you where people can find you. You just did that. And also, I want to give you one other plug, too, that, you know, this is Kevin's a guy that is making himself available in terms of doing podcasts like this, but also out doing public speaking. That will return. I've actually done a speech in where you live, West Palm, Florida last year, which was fun to do. Never been out there before, but you know, people need to be inspired. They need to hear these positive messages. And so for anybody out there, if you're a marketing meeting planner and you need somebody that has been in the public eye, has been through some adversity, really knows the struggle, this is your guy. So Kevin, I totally appreciate coming on, making time for this, and you know, just sharing your story.
Thank you so much. People can go to the official Facebook page of Kevin Sorbo or at KSorbs on Twitter. I post a lot. I post the truth and I post funny things. So if that offends you, then don't follow me.
Great stuff. All right, man. Thank you so much. There is the one, the only Kevin Sorbo. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.